Cape Talk.
Ask Dr. Josh.
Yes, indeed. It is that time of the week again. Where are we? 27 minutes to midnight. And you're listening to Sarah Jane King on Late Nights on Cape Talk. Now, on Sunday night, we were joined by Bekisi Sotumhube, who, by his own admission, has physically, sexually and psychologically violated, he says, at least 100 women. He recently wrote an open letter in the Sowetan in which he describes in stomach-wrenching detail the extent of the abuse that he inflicted on former partners. But what makes men like Becky do what they do? For this week's Ask Dr. Josh segment, we look at intimate partner violence. And please, if you feel able to, do share your stories with us on whichever side of the coin you may be coming from, whether you are somebody who has experienced intimate partner violence have asked yourself that very question, why? Or perhaps on the other side, maybe you, like Bekisisa, are or were an abuser. Are you able to offer us tonight any insight into what drove that behaviour? We are creating a safe space for you this evening. We welcome your calls, your SMSs, your WhatsApps. There's no need to give your real name if you don't feel comfortable, but we would love you to engage in this hugely important conversation in light, of course, of 16 days of activism. So for this week's Ask Dr. Josh, why do men abuse? And also, why do some people stay? Josh, welcome. Great to have you back with us on the show. It was only 2 days since you last joining us.
Yes, it is good to be back. And I was asking Jeremy, staying up, the life that you lead is so different than mine, and thank goodness for time differences. Just thank goodness for time differences, because I could not do what I'm doing right now if I was in your time zone.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Listen, I do just want to go to an SMS that we've had in before we start our conversation. It says, "Hi, Sarah Jane.
Yes.
Why are you restricting your discussion on gender violence to acts committed by men? It's rather sexist to exclude toxic acts perpetuated by women, which, whilst they are usually less violent than acts carried out by men, they are usually more insidious, with far-reaching long-term psychological effects for the husband. Please be balanced and cover acts carried out by both sexes." I'm going to answer that by number one saying it's 16 days of activism against violence against women and children, and number two, Dave, maybe have a little look back in history and have a look back at the statistics that show really the reality of violence perpetuated against men by women versus women against men. Josh, back to you.
You
heard, we sent you the conversation that we had with Bekisi Sotumhube on Sunday evening, in which he spoke very candidly, very honestly about his past as an abuser of women. What was your take on that argument?
It was chilling. I mean, it was chilling in that it was so transparent. It was so, not transparent, it was so detailed. It was so raw. You know, on the one hand, as a psychologist, you read his history and you start clicking off the check marks. Abused and molested by the hands of his brother, watched violence growing up. And the reason I say this, and I'm going to preface this now by saying this is not to excuse it, but we do know that we see the pattern that when a child grows up, in a home where there is violence that they witness, particularly when there is psychological and physical abuse, similarly when they are molested, there is a greater risk of this. And so you saw those things, but then the other piece that you saw, frankly, and it's hard to tell, but you saw this kind of almost matter of fact.
Mm.
Almost, and when I mean matter of fact, I mean an incorporation of, this is just who I am.
Mm.
This is what I did. This is where I was. This is how I acted out. And while he talked about going through therapy and recovering, you just saw it as somebody who started out bad from a very young age, and it went down a path that continued to get worse and worse and worse and worse, all along being incorporated into his very being.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the conversation. Sorry, Josh. I was just going to say that the conversation itself was a difficult one, but his article in the Sowetan was one of the most distressing things I think I've ever read.
Yes. And I would say this. It's extreme. It's not out of the ordinary, but it's extreme. And what I mean by that is not every man who abuses physically tells a story in this way. You will hear about the violence. You often hear about growing up in a house with molestation and others and other sorts of circumstances. But you don't often hear as much about sort of an incorporation into who they are. What you do hear more of is the, I couldn't help it. I don't know why I did it. Mm. It was something that I couldn't control. It was my anger. I mean, these are what people who come out the other side, who have maybe gone through therapy, will come to realize, that it's impulse control, anger control, not understanding what it means to be angry and not take it out physically, as well as a whole heck of a lot of insecurity, shame, and fear. That's why the power game is such an issue when it comes to abuse. Abusers historically will feel less powerful, will feel insecure, again, usually coming from either being abused themselves, etc. And the way that they compensate for that is in a horrific and violent way through physical, sexual, and psychological abuse.
Dr. Josh, let me ask you, I have in my lifetime heard of other men who come forward and say, this used to be me or this is me, but it is very, very, very infrequent, particularly with such candor as Becky spoke about both with us in our conversation and in that article. And my thought in that, does that mean that either there are men out there who just simply aren't acknowledging what they're doing, and they're just happily going through life as Becky is, but without the counselling, and this is just becomes the pattern of their life forever and ever? Is it that there is no remorse, or is it that there is no healing, or I shouldn't say no, I shouldn't use that blanket term, but very little healing? Because I'm trying to equate it with something that I can get my mind around, and all I can think of is addiction or alcoholism. So people, mm-hmm. People are alcoholics, and their behaviour is awful, and it affects other people, and it affects them, and it's just generally toxic and unpleasant. But there comes a point where, for some people, they are able to find healing. And once they've done that, many, many people will speak very openly about what they've done and speak very openly about their addiction in a bid to help others understand and to keep themselves well. We do not see that with men who abuse.
Not who perpetuate. I mean, we've seen, you do see that when the cycle stops. So again, I can think of some athletes here in the U.S., and you can think of others, just that's what's coming to mind, where they got caught, high-profile situation, they lost their kids, they lost their significant other, they lost something in which it brought them down, much like an addiction, to the bottom, and they realized, oh my God, what have I done? That does happen. I'm not saying that it happens all the time, but it does happen, because a lot of the abusive nature is early childhood learned. It's learned and reinforced over and over again. Inappropriate ways of managing their feelings, inappropriate ways of interacting with others. And so my point is, when they do wake up, you will hear men say, I've abused, and they do show remorse. The problem is, men who are in the midst of it, who are afraid of getting caught, afraid of going to jail, afraid, frankly, of what they've done, bury it, modify it, twist it in their brain so much that they believe that is, you know, we hear this all the time, it's not my fault, you made me angry. We see the same thing with parents who abuse a kid. Look what you did to me. So my point is, it is wrong, it is horrific, it is sick, but it is not every man who just simply has no insight. It's a lot of men who are in it so deep that they can't even face the reality of what's going on. And particularly if they continue, much like an addict, to get away with it.
Yeah.
To get away with it. They're not thrown in jail. They're not having their kids taken away. They don't realize that their lives are falling apart. And part of the reason I say that, Sarah Jane, is while it's not the case for all of them, so often one of the risk factors is a history of either being abused themselves or growing up in an abused household, which tells us that there is a learning piece there, that it's not just that they are evil, born evil. And I know that doesn't sound nice to some of your listeners, but clinically, very often, that's what's going on.
Oh, I mean, it's tough, isn't it? And again, I speak from my experience only, but also from conversations that I've had. And to, you know, I've been in relationships where there's been abuse, certainly not to the extent that I know that many, many women suffer. And yes, men too. But the question that I always wanted to know was why? And it got to a situation where I couldn't get beyond the fact that I thought this was something that I could control with my own behavior. I used to wake up in the morning and say, whatever you do today, don't piss him off. If you do anything today, make sure that you don't piss him off. And just strange things. And people used to say to me, and I remember my mum saying to me, why do you stay? And I stayed because 10% of the time, 90% of the time, it was terrible. And 10% of the time, he was remorseful. And that met my own need of codependence, I guess, by that point. And so I lived for that 10%. If it had been shitty and horrible 100% of the time, I probably would have left. I can't say that I would have done, but I probably would have done. But when you're hanging on for 10%, the Jekyll and Hyde, and that's just my experience.
Well, and listen to what you said. Let's just dive into yours. 90% of the time it was bad.
Yeah.
10% it was good. Imagine if that was 60% bad, 40% good, or 60% good, 40% bad.
Yeah.
Right? And let's put another couple other pieces there. As you know, it's not all physical. And in fact, very often, when there's no physical or sexual of any sort going on, it's the psychological piece. Mm. It's the making your world smaller. It's the controlling your behavior. It's the very thing that you just said, which is flipping it such that his rage is determined in your mind and his mind by your behavior.
Mm.
And so my point is, why do they stay? Well, they stay because A, it's not time. B, very often they are remorseful, and sometimes very truthfully remorseful, just like an addict.
Mm.
C, there is this psychological prisoner of war sort of Stockholm syndrome that can come up because he is not her. He's not beating her.
Yeah.
He's not doing it. He's saying, just like yours, hey, look, sweetie, if I love you and things are great, and as long as we, you know, as long as we stay cool, everything's fine. And so your mind, and let me say one other piece. Very often these women, these are their husbands. They love them.
Yeah.
They love them. So when we say to a victim, and then throw in the piece about that they also very often either fear for their lives or don't have the logistics to get out.
Mm-hmm.
When we do the why don't you just leave, I mean, come on. We in this day and age need to get past the why don't you just leave.
Mm.
Because they're not doing it because they love abuse. They're not doing it. Sometimes there's kids. What do you do if there's kids? Do you just leave?
Yeah.
How do you leave? What if he says, if I find you, I'll kill you? Or if you leave me, I'll kill you or I'll kill myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you've got to understand that while I am not trying to create a defense for the men who abuse, it is psychologically complex. It comes from very often feelings of inadequacy and lack of power. And so the whole game is a power play to overcome their sense of inadequacy on top of usually a learned experience about how we deal with anger, which is physically.
Josh, can I pick up on something that you said there? And for me, this is what's really interesting. You said the whole point of the game, or the power game. And I think from my experience and from the experiences of friends of mine and guests that we've had in, so often there is a question of, is this person actually enjoying what they're doing? Because it can seem unfathomable that some of the psychological, I mean, there's the physical, yes, which is horrendous, but the psychological torture, the mind games, the gaslighting, it almost mm-hmm. seems as if this person is enjoying doing that. Is that likely to be the case, or can that just be a case of, can that just be perception?
We got to be careful, got to unpack enjoying. Is it reinforcing? Yes. Does it help avoid their own fears of inadequacy? Yes.
So it is deliberate. And I suppose that was the other point.
Yes.
I've clumsily used the word enjoying, but is it deliberate, or is it a sort of a subconscious behavior that they've thought somewhere? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, when I did this last time, this was the reaction I got, and therefore that was the payoff. Or is there a conscious thing of, when she gets home, I'm going to ask her where she's been, and I'm going to tell her that that I've timed her, and that it shouldn't have taken that long for her to get back because I've worked out the route and I've calculated it. Is there that level
that
of...
That part's
of...
deliberate because it's to gain control. It's to gain control as to not lose control. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the thinking is, I must control you. So if everything is going right, everything is going fine, and I don't perceive that I'm losing control over you, I'm losing power, I'm losing my grip over you, then everything is okay. Now, the problem that happens is it gets more and more irrational. You're 5 minutes late. And then now all of a sudden, there is the perception, why is she 5 minutes? How dare she do this to me? I.e., at a lower level, at a deeper level, I am losing my control. Mm. I am not as powerful as I thought I was. Mm. I do not have the control I thought I did. And coupled with it, that makes me angry, frustrated, and very often ashamed of myself for not having that power. And because of what I've learned, I'm going to simply take it out on her. Because you know what? And this is the belief. It's her fault. It is her fault that I'm... You hear this all the time. Don't make me do this. Don't make me do this. In their warped, sick, twisted mind, what you've done 5 minutes late, seeing somebody else, interacting with somebody else, not paying attention to what they're saying, not paying enough attention to them, not giving them sex, whatever that is, you've made them feel inadequate, bad, sad, angry, and the only way that you can learn your lesson is if they take it out on you. And you know what that sounds like? Tell me that doesn't sound like a child abuse.
Yeah.
It's the same pattern.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
It's just repeating that pattern between two adults.
Mm. If you are just joining us now, it is a Wednesday evening segment, our regular segment with Dr. Josh Klepo, Ask Dr. Josh. And tonight we're talking about intimate partner violence. Why do some men abuse? Now, I'd like to put a call out now. We'd love for you to join the conversation in the last few minutes that we've got before we head to the news. Are you somebody who is a survivor of intimate partner abuse? What was the key moment? What was the moment for you that you said enough? or that you felt strong enough to leave. What was it? What was that turning point for you? On the flip side, perhaps you are somebody who has abused in previous relationships. Maybe you're abusing in the relationship that you're in now and you want help. Then please do get in touch with the show. Share your story with us. There's no need to give your real name if you don't feel comfortable. And as always, we've got Josh with us, who is an expert and is creating a safe space for you to share your stories. Give us a call on 021 446 0567. You can drop us an SMS to 31567 or send us a WhatsApp to 072 567 1567. What do people do then? What is the best way to respond to an abuser? And again, my parallels are, and my frames of reference are, largely around addiction. I know that for some people, going to things like Codependence Anonymous or Naranon or Al-Anon help. If you're not in a position to leave, and that's the, as you mentioned, that is the case for some people. They are simply not in a position to leave. Is there a way that they can survive in a relationship where abuse is happening, or do the, is the work around finding strength and practical means by which to leave?
Yeah, it's the latter. I mean, so we always tell people, first of all, protect yourself, do what you need to do. And sometimes that means staying. Sometimes it does mean staying temporarily while you gain information, strength, support, what have you. You know, again, it varies case by case, so I almost hesitate to say, you know, do this. And I'm going to preface it with saying I'm giving you general comments, general responses. Every case is different. If you can get yourself seeing a counselor, if you can see clergy, if he will let you engage with somebody else, where you can gather information. There are online support groups. You will have to keep secrets. You have to keep secrets. Speaking with family members. In other words, the whole dynamic that happens in abuse is he or the abuser shuts down your world, right? And so you not only have to deal only with the abuser, but you have no connection to the outside world. You must try to connect with the outside world in the most safe way possible. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is more of a psychological thing, no matter what is going through your head, I can change him if I just don't, if I just this. You have to remind yourself over and over, and if you're listening to me, nobody should ever lay a hand on you in any way, period. That includes shaking, that includes a grab of the wrist, a twisting around. They don't have to hit you to make it abuse. So if you're listening to me, hear this. That is not right, and there is no rationalization to try to bring it back. Stop trying to bring it back. What you shift to is, this is not right. I need to figure out how to create some separation. And what that may mean, again, in the more benign cases, where maybe you had an anger outburst and he hit you, and it was a one-shot deal, and that's it. Well, it's time for you to go to therapy. And it is not impossible to have situations where he says, well, do whatever you need to do. If he says, do what you need to do and you can go to therapy, get yourself to therapy, because that starts becoming your tentacles back out to society. Mm-hmm. There are crisis lines. There are 911 calls in this country. Mm-hmm. There are emergency calls in your country. Those are the kinds of things you have to do, but don't blame yourself for not leaving immediately. You leave when you have a plan. Mm.
And that is where we're going to leave it for tonight. Dr. Josh, thanks so much for taking us through this so expertly, as you do every week. We really appreciate you on the show. And we will chat again now. Will we chat next week? Yes. Well, next week is our last week before we break for the festive season. So we'll chat then. Thanks, Dr. Josh.
Thanks, Sergey.